Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
Hello, my name is Bruce Rubin, and I'm pleased to present today's Pediatric Insight conversation. The topic we're discussing today are leadership qualities for GME leaders and what to look for in recruiting a program director. The council members in attendance are Bruder Stapleton, Craig Hillemeyer, Valerie Opapari, Robert Selwyn, Wes Milliken, and John Hayes. We're also delighted to welcome two special guests today, Dr. Chloe Douglas, who's a pediatric nephrologist and assistant fellowship program director for transplantation at Oregon Health and Science University, and Dr. Dean Chen, who is the new program director of the pediatric residency GME programs at the Children's Hospital of Richmond at Virginia Commonwealth University. So to begin, I'm going to ask Chloe to lead off by telling us what qualifications and qualities would make a good GME leader. And part of this is, what is the value of an advanced degree like the MEd in education? Chloe.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. And I had the opportunity to kind of survey recent faculty, new faculty, as I'm within 2 years post graduation from my subspecialty training. And overall, the theme that came out through all of our conversations was being in touch, being an in-touch program director, whether that's a residency or fellowship program director. And if we think about what training encompasses, it's hard, especially in the hiring process, because everyone's training program looks different. There's this set of guidelines from ACGME of what's required, but site, hospital staffing, teaching opportunities, et cetera, all look different. But one of the themes is clinical service, taking care of patients, doing that clinical service. And a lot of folks reference that having a program director that overall understands what clinical service means, whether that's like for a general pediatrics residency who often at times are hospitalists, for example, who know what it's like to be on call, inpatient, rounding, because that is a big portion of training for both residency and fellowship, along with being in touch of like the other aspects of training. What are the research opportunities at the institution if someone has an interest in that? QI opportunities, medical education. The program director doesn't need to necessarily be an expert in all of those things, but have an awareness of what how to direct their trainees in that direction, which does transfer to then thinking about fellowship applications or faculty applications for the next stage of life. Because as everyone gets further along in their training, everyone wants to know, how do I get the job I want? What type of job do I want? And having someone who has local, national connections is very helpful, especially if you have a trainee who's really interested in a niche field, just looking to kind of set out on a different path for education, as education's like always, and faculty positions are always changing over time. The last part that kind of came to mind too was being in touch both personally and like a social emotional component. I think people know training is hard and training is hard on trainees, and being available for your trainees to support them in times of need, being available, an open door policy. Some of my favorite people who trained me were just in the office around door open that I could just pop in and speak to. Overall, having somewhat of that like personal, social, emotional connection and investment in the trainee and their success is overall really important. Sometimes those things are super hard to gauge in an interview process in a division on GME program searches, totally, especially with certain shortages and certain subspecialties. But I think like a rigorous interview process overall is really helpful in trying to ascertain those things, especially doing in-person things. Now we're so remote, but you really get a feel for the candidate when you meet with them and speak with them in person. And then with regards to the Masters of Education, I do not have one of those, but I have friends who have done it before. And I think of the ones who had that training and also are pediatric residency directors, some fellowship directors. They're overall quite good at understanding how to teach and adjust to different learning styles, because I think a lot of medical training is showing up and just being like ready to like be hands-on. This is a hands-on learning environment. And for some people, that's just not how necessarily they learn. And they're really good at structuring curriculums, being flexible to meet the trainees' needs overall. And I do think they have a different skill set that I know in others versus others who have not had that. That being said, I think it's hard when we're so short-handed, like what's more important, having the degree versus all these other aspects of that interview process or things that we desire in a program director. But I do think it is an advantage to have one if possible.
Chloe, that was great. You've put a lot of effort into this. I also want to note that I was watching your friend and former mentor, Bruder, during your discussion. I don't think I've ever seen him smile so much. Valerie, do you have any thing to add to that great exposition by Chloe?
Chloe, you brought up some wonderful points. I guess I might answer this question kind of going back to the basics. You know, when you're a chair and you're thinking about individuals to tap for GME roles and responsibilities, I reflected on sort of what I thought about. And, you know, first and foremost, I think you yourself have to be a role model as an educator and someone who's, you said the word in touch, and I think that's a wonderful word to encompass important aspects of the individual's capabilities. But I'd also say, like, highly engaged, you know, somebody who from residency, perhaps to fellowship, on faculty, education is a significant part of what they gain joy from doing, and it's reflected in their conduct on the floors, how they're viewed as a role model as an educator, and how they give feedback, how they do self-directed learning to improve their own educational skills. Those were all things that I looked at as a chair when I thought of candidates to put in these roles and responsibilities. I think some of the other things that I looked at was not just communication at the level of the resident, but communication with faculty. You know, if you're a young assistant or associate professor, and you've got to do some remedial work with faculty who are tenured and much more empowered in some ways, you know, are you going to be able to hold your own when you have to deal with a faculty member who's maybe not meeting the bar of expectations for the department on how they should conduct themselves? And not only that, but your ability to communicate with the GME leaders in the dean's office and how you would hold yourself, perhaps if there was a catastrophic mental health issue with a young trainee that you had to be part of the conversation around. And then the other thing also, I hate to say this, but sadly, there have been times in my tenure where we had to involve lawyers in risk management and deal with some very difficult personal and professional conduct issues. And again, you need to have somebody who's in these roles that can sit at the table with individuals with those portfolios and productively provide input and be part of the work to, you know, gain some solutions to the issues at hand. So I think it starts at the basics that you have to be a great role model as an educator, but you have to either have the capacity to acquire skills in these kind of scenarios in order to be truly very, very successful. And in relation to the Med Ed, I agree with you completely, Chloe. I don't know that everyone needs to get a formal Med Ed degree, but I think a chair and a dean and an institution needs to invest in our GME leaders. And if that's one of the things that would advance your skill sets, then I think we should be willing to invest. But I think it's not just a one-time thing. You have to continuously be investing in learning about the pedagogy of educating in the medical field. And that is constantly evolving. As you know, we've had many, many evaluation tools. We've had many, many ways for people to gain personal improvements in their own teaching skills. And as those things evolve, I think there has to be investments in the individuals who lead these programs to gain those insights so that they can pass that information on to others. So I felt very, very compelled that all of our educators had to attend all the national meetings and hear what was going on at other institutions so that they could grow themselves. So those, Bruce, would be some of the comments that I would just provide on top of Chloe's great, great, great perspectives.
Thank you, Valerie. And as you were speaking about managing perhaps problematic faculty who are may not be appropriately working with trainees, I also thought about something that might be even more difficult, and that's working with a struggling resident or fellow who is a very nice person, but despite getting opportunities, is unable to fulfill the requirements and may need dismissal. That's one of the hardest things that I think a program director ever has to do.
Let me just raise another whole level of communication skill sets. When those sad situations occur, you're not just dealing with the institutional GME leadership in the dean's office, but you're oftentimes dealing with leadership at the Board of Pediatrics. And so again, it's a series of skill sets that is really critical to being successful. Hopefully, these situations do not occur very frequently. But when they do occur, it's an emotional drain for the GME leader to be in these kind of positions, to be advocating for the resident at the same time as realizing your responsibilities to graduating individuals to serve, taking care of children.
I agree. We'll hear from Jean later, but I think that's one of the hardest things that we do as a GME director. Craig, when should we open a national search for a GME director, and when should we look at an internal director be given, say, an associate program director be given the position?
Thank you, Bruce. I think that's a really good question. And I think that it really brings up the issue that was talked about by Valerie and Chloe just a little bit ago. And that is you have to invest in your medical education program. And part of that investment is actually taking the time to make sure that you have a pipeline of people who are learning about the intricacies of medical education and those communication issues and working with all the various parts of the College of Medicine that make a successful program director. And so if you've been doing that, then you could really sit back and say, well, do I have the person here that I think I want to continue in the program, or do we need to look elsewhere? And that really brings up the question, are you at where you want to be in your educational program? Are there major changes that need to take place? And I think that by and large, if you do have large changes that you envision happening, it's actually probably pushes you more towards looking outside to see what's available to come in and make those changes, because oftentimes it's much easier to make those changes if you come from the outside than if you're internally rising to that position. So that's probably the first question you need to really ask. Are we at where we want to be? And then I think the second question is, what is the culture of the program? I mean, if you're at a large children's hospital that has a real culture of always looking throughout the nation, trying to find the best available person to deal with that, but to deal with that situation, whether it be a division within the department or whatever, then I think you probably are going to want to think about having a search for graduate medical education director. Sometimes smaller regional programs wouldn't necessarily want to have, don't have those resources and might not want to embark on a national search for a program director in medical education. So I think those are probably the questions that you need to ask yourself as a leader when you're trying to decide whether or not you really want to begin to have a national search. It's not always yes or always no. It depends a lot on what that situation is.
Great, you brought up some great points about differentiation between smaller and larger programs. I want to get back to that in a moment, but first I'd like to ask Wesley how one would potentially change or focus a search when you're considering internal versus external candidate.
Dovetailing on what Craig had shared, I think it's really, if you're going to go external, I mean, I think knowing in a lot of detail what specifics you're looking for. I mean, a lot of the things Chloe talked about earlier as it relates to qualities. I mean, every program has, the residency program, the fellowship programs have different needs culturally, tactically. So more importantly, from an external perspective, that there's transparency and clarity around what you're actually looking for versus just a shotgun approach for anybody looking for a GME leadership role. I think that's the quickest way to I think, foster the negatives that already exist versus finding somebody that's capable of affecting change. So I think that's those would be my thoughts, Bruce, for sure.
In reflecting on this topic, one of the things that I noted was historically, especially in surgery, being the director of a residency program or fellowship program was actually a step along one's path towards ultimately being a chair, for example. And I wonder if that's still true today. I'd love to hear people's opinions on this because it's such an important role. I'm concerned that because it's there, the requirements of graduate medical education have become so specific, and there's really almost a unique skill set required for that job. Is it still viewed by young academic physicians as a step towards career progression?
That's a really interesting question, Bob. I can say that I think with the way graduate medical education has gone, that people who are in graduate medical education in formal roles generally look to continue in graduate medical education. I think it's very different being a department chair or even a division chief than being in GME. It's just that there's so many more rules and regulations now. The ACGME program requirements get more extensive every year. Our governing boards, the American Board of Pediatrics, things change very, very quickly. My clinical role is I'm a PICU doc by training, but I find that my GME hat takes up more and more of my time relative to my clinical time every year. I don't know if you would agree with that, Chloe, but that's my perspective.
I think that the GME workload totally starts consuming time more than the clinical workload. And the folks I know that are quite farther along in medical education do seem to be going more of the med ed trajectory than department chair for my small sampling, like getting really involved in the medical school, becoming a dean in the medical school, curriculum, national consortiums, things like that, regards to med ed and less like the department chair route, but in pediatrics, but my sampling is also small and I haven't been doing this forever, so hard to say.
Are schools and departments giving those in these roles enough credit, if you will, for academic advancement? Is it valued by medical schools to the extent that it should be for promotion?
I personally think it is if you are at a academic institution. That's actually one of the reasons I am here at VCU is that I do feel like medical education is valued more so than where I was previously. So yeah, that definitely was the case for me.
I was just going to add a perspective, from an outside firm perspective, in the sense that 25 years in academic pediatrics, it was customarily a go-to target area for a division chief role to for us 20 years ago to reach out to program directors who would elevate. But over this time, we've just seen the complexities of graduate medical education. And the complexities of the financial and operational aspects of a department or a division, they've kind of grown at the same time and grown apart, right? So I think it's hard to grab all the skills necessary to do both today. And so, I mean, my advice for those interested in both graduate medical education as well as becoming a chief or a chair, I think those people should strongly consider keeping their hand in the operation side of academic pediatrics as a way to foster their candidacy in that respect. But just an outside observation, Bruce.
Is there a difference in the role for small versus large programs, particularly as you're looking for leadership?
My earlier experience is at a smaller program as chair. The program director played a more central leadership role in kind of being the institutional head of GME and overseeing the fellowship directors were more or less under that director. In a larger program, there's usually there's an institutional official, and the number of fellowships and the requirements for the fellowships really need individual oversight. And so the program director may or may not be even the vice chair of education for the department, who oversees everyone. So the roles can be quite different in terms of their scope in small and larger departments. The program director usually sits within a GME leadership group in a larger department, whereas probably is the leader in a smaller department. So I think in some ways, the broader leadership experience for a small department may be even as important or more important than a larger department who have multiple leaders who report to a vice chair of education. So it can be a little different.
I want to turn to Chloe. She had some additional thoughts.
Yeah, and it's a little bit back to what we were talking about the different pathways and the limitations around clinical load. And I think OHSU does a great job of promoting our educators, promoting and giving time for them to educate and lead certain programs at OHSU. That being said, especially in Ped subspecialty, with the change perhaps from session-based to RVU-based reimbursement, et cetera, I am hearing a lot from my clinician educators being pushed by institutions to see more patients to generate more volume. So overall, some of them are calculating their FTE out to, if you actually calculate it out, to 1.5, 1.6 to do everything in a day. And I think that does limit somewhat of the personal leadership development and wanting you to move forward along this pathway leads to burnout, et cetera. So it's somewhat hard space right now to navigate, I think, for our educators.
That actually is a fantastic segue into our last question. Thank you for bringing that up. Jean, we've been talking now about how to recruit for somebody to take this leadership position. You've just taken a position in a large program. What should somebody who is looking to move into a leadership position in GME be looking for? What questions should they be asking? What would be important for them to know?
That's a great question, Bruce. I have just gone through this process recently myself. I think there's a couple of things that are important to talk about. One is people that are looking for leadership positions in GME are usually mid-career. They usually have an idea of what they want. They probably have had a formal role in GME already, most likely an associate program director or a program director. I think if they're looking to go somewhere else, they're looking for one of two things. One is, of course, moving from an APD to a PD role, or if they're already a PD, they're looking for something different in the institution. Usually, something different means if, again, talking about our careers being in GME, they're usually looking for more extensive GME and more extensive support. So, what I mean by that is, I think, of course, the people make the institution and the educational support, and that comes from a multiple places. One is, of course, graduate medical education at the institution as a whole. I think, Bruder, you mentioned the designated institutional official, how many residencies and fellowships are at the institution as a whole, how much mentoring you can get from other leaders and program directors. Prior to coming to VCU, I was a program director at another institution. And the first couple of years of being a PD, it's almost like doing another fellowship. There's a lot of work, there's a lot to learn. And the more mentors you have, the better in that regard. There's also, of course, very relevant to this call, the support we get from our department. So, does the department chair strongly believe in medical education? Hopefully they do. Is there a vice chair of education? How involved are they? And then, of course, the PD is always going to be looking for the faculty that are there. So, the associate program directors, how many of them are there? How much time do they have for their educational and administrative roles? The core faculty who are heavily involved, either with the fellows or the residents, how much time do they have to work with our trainees? Chief residents, how many chief residents are there? Chief residents basically, as you all know, operate and we can't operate without them. And I don't want to leave the program coordinators out. I feel like sometimes we forget about them, but I'm the first one to say that your program is only as good as your program coordinator. And so how many program coordinators are there, and are they experienced, and do they keep everything running behind the scenes? So the people are super, super important. And I will say, I think the other aspect that more mid-career experienced people are looking for are an awareness and a motivation to deal with the current challenges in graduate medical education. So GME has changed a lot since I've been a PD, and there are many, many challenges, but the most pressing one, for example, now in pediatrics is, Chloe alluded to this, but it's trouble recruiting into pediatric residency from medical school, trouble recruiting into pediatric fellowships from pediatric residencies. When I was looking, I definitely asked about those issues and made sure that there was a infrastructure and a plan to work through these challenges. Those were the kind of the two main aspects that I found very helpful when I was looking in my search.
Thank you, Gene. In fact, you mentioned when we met a couple of weeks ago how important it was for you to reach out to the students to tell them about the great joy of going into pediatrics. And that is a very important role. I have a question, one additional question that's probably difficult that I'll ask you and ask Wesley. Given the needs of a program director and you're looking at a program, what resources should you be asking for? And I know that this is different among smaller or larger programs. Valerie already mentioned having support to attend meetings, potentially for additional training. But how would you put together your request for a resource package?
There are national organizations, of course, for GME. The big one for pediatrics, as you all know, is the Association of Pediatric Program Directors, APPD. So we need support for membership and attending meetings there. The pediatric network is very, very strong for medical educators, and we need that. Like I kind of alluded to before, I think for support, it's mainly making sure that the faculty you work with do have the support that they or the time that they need to work with trainees. We also alluded to this earlier, but a PD definitely needs their time, but the faculty do as well. There's a lot of paperwork and forms to fill out and meetings that go along with working with residents and fellows. That's important and it should be recognized.
Wesley, I think you had something to contribute as well.
I was just going to focus on one thing, one resource. And Ty, I'm still hung up on something Valerie said early in this conversation, but I think the greatest resource that a program director and anybody involved in GME today can have is political capital. And I think that political capital is going to come from the chair. But when I think about the workforce shortages we're dealing with, when I think about med students and residents and fellows running into grumpy faculty who are dealing with burnout and RVU pressures and things like that, to me, I feel like the program directors can be one of the saving forces of academic pediatrics from the standpoint if they are empowered, if they have the political capital to own the educational environment and be able to really drive positive experiences for trainees. I mean, I think if we thought about a strategy that would allow our program directors to drive that nationally, I just think we'd see more med students going into residency and we'd see more residents going into subspecialties. I would definitely advocate for political capital as a resource that a great program director is going to need to be successful.
Gene, you will have a follow-up.
Yeah, Wesley, that was very insightful. I just wanted to add that all of those circumstances that I think Valerie mentioned earlier about faculty being unprofessional to trainees, lawyers, and professionalism issues, and Bruce, you mentioned working with struggling learners. These are all aspects of being a PD that I didn't really appreciate initially. They're real, and you need the support of your department chair to navigate these, especially with regards to faculty.
I'm glad that we're ending with this kind of discussion because I think every one of us that are on this call fell in love with pediatrics from our rotations as medical students and meeting inspiring young and older care providers, some of which may have had, major research programs and invited you into their labs or invited you to participate in some of their research during your summer months in med school. But basically, it was the people you came in contact with and the children. And we just recently wrote a piece about it's a calling to become a pediatrician. It's a real calling, especially when you see some of the issues around reimbursements for financial, for this the work of being a pediatrician. It's certainly not on par by specialty, as we've talked about many times. But people who commit to doing this commit to doing it because of the great people they come into contact with. And so those of us who are privileged to be a chair, a division chief, to be a GME leader, to appoint someone to these roles and responsibilities, we have to constantly be nurturing the love that brought us into this in the first place, amidst all the regulatory issues, all of the burnout issues, all of the RVU issues. We just have to keep reminding ourselves why we're doing this. And, I think today's conversation was very inspiring because, when I think back at all the people I had around me in my GME office, they gave me so much joy every time we met, talking about the accomplishments of the students and the accomplishments of the residents and the accomplishments of the fellows and who's going to go into this field and who's going to go into that field. And I was constantly reminded that that joy still existed. So kudos to both of you. Thank you for joining us today. And Bruce, what a great conversation, because we all have to commit to bringing the joy front and center in everything that we do. And at any rate, it was very inspiring. So thank you.
So, Valerie, to follow on that and perhaps raise a smile, every year as a chair, I would be invited to speak to the medical students to tell them why pediatrics. And I would always begin by saying, I chose pediatrics not because I like children, because I assume that if you don't like children, you're probably a monster. But I chose pediatrics because I like pediatricians. Pediatricians have an activated promoter on their nurturing gene, and that makes them excellent colleagues, excellent to work with. And if you're going to spend your life working with colleagues, I can think of few better colleagues to work with than my pediatric colleagues. So that would always be my starting point. I want to thank everybody for the discussion today. It's been excellent. If you are interested in additional leadership discussions via the council, you can find them at Career Physicians webpage, and we will be sending that information out as well.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic, pediatrics, and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com.